Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Happy Friday to you. Excited to be here. We've got Grand Slam tennis action going on during the show. You heard Brian Fenley. He'll give you the updates throughout so you won't miss anything from Djokovic, Nadal. And you're not going to miss anything that happened last night in the NBA playoffs because Ryan Hollins and I have got you covered here on Fox Sports Radio. As today's show is brought to you by Discover. Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year. It's amazing because Discover's accepted at 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen report. Limitations apply. And Ryan Hollins, a win is a win is a win is a win. And the Milwaukee Bucks got back into their series with the Brooklyn Nets. It may not have been pretty, and everyone wants to look at the negative side of things for the Milwaukee Bucks, but they are back in the series, winning 86-83 last night in the Brew City.
Yeah, they are, but all wins aren't created equal. But we spoke about this yesterday, right?
Yeah.
The toughest thing to do is to beat a team in an elimination game. You're going to get their A++ effort. I thought that Bud, we spoke about it yesterday, just getting Giannis in situations where he can be effective, rolling to the rim, getting downhill, not just putting the basketball in his hands. I think you're setting him up for failure. Obviously, you saw Giannis's struggles on the free throw line. And the fact that the Bucks only won by 3 points in a game where they played their best of their best, I'm extremely concerned. I was more impressed with Brooklyn yesterday. And I thought, honestly, there was a very friendly whistle for the Bucks, even though we know that later in the playoffs, you know, the physicality amps up.
Okay. Are you saying that the NBA said this is one of our top two series going on right now? We need to continue this one a little bit longer. Is that what you are saying, Ryan Hollins, from what happened in last night's Game 3 between Brooklyn and Milwaukee?
No, that's not what I'm saying. But when you are the aggressor, P.J. Tucker, who had the start, and you get physical, you know, I thought the referees let him play. And it ended up favoring Milwaukee on that last possession where Bruce Brown shoots a left-hand floater. You know, I could have called, you know, 5 or 6 fouls in that possession alone, man. But ultimately, you know, one thing we'd always say in the locker room, we're going into big games. You know, the referees favor a team that's the aggressor. And I thought that Milwaukee was that. They gave themselves a puncher's chance to win the game because they're not more skilled. They don't shoot the ball better. They don't execute better the ball better than the Nets. I mean, heck, you know, the crazy part, right? Am I wrong to say they don't defend better? Or is it just that you're trying to defend Kevin Durant? That's a different type of defense.
Durant, that's – I felt all along in this series, and even in their regular season matchups, that Durant is going to score. Durant is going to be the guy that there's nothing you can do about his 35 that he puts up, or last night, the 30 that he put up on just 11 of 28 shooting. I do think some of that PJ Tucker stuff got to Durant. You even see them go head-to-head, and yeah, Durant likes that, and it's great that Durant's bodyguard can be on the sidelines and end up interfering in a melee and be termed as, and I'm using air quotes, NBA security, which is a whole other matter. But by the way, have bodyguards always been on sidelines of NBA games? Is
always.
This something new, or is this
always?
Okay, always.
Always. Now, if a player like Shaq or someone like that, or Chris Paul, that has like their guy, that's more so a personal decision. But as far as having team security, bodyguards, as you call them, they're always there.
Yeah, and that's
they're just smaller. Night. They're smaller than the players. That's what's throwing you off because they're just little guys with suits on.
That bodyguard looked like a pulling guard on a sweep to the outside in the National Football League when he came charging in. And then we find out that he's Kevin Durant's security detail or bodyguard, and it adds a whole nother layer to it. But I think I look at what happened with the Bucks, and I give Brooklyn credit because what did we talk about all throughout the regular season when it came down to the postseason on what teams are going to have to do if they want to win? And that's just a simple enough, play defense. It's why we gave the Lakers probably so much leeway despite how their regular season went and the injuries that they had to deal with, because we thought that the Lakers were going to be the team that locks down on defense in the postseason. They're no longer in the postseason, but the Brooklyn Nets are, and Brooklyn has locked down on Milwaukee in three straight games. So I will tip my cap to Brooklyn, but the point about PJ Tucker and what he did with Kevin Durant's always going to get his points, but if you can do that on 11 of 28 shooting, that's a win for Milwaukee. If Joe Harris may not go 1 for 11 ever again in his entire career and 1 of 7 from behind the arc, but that played a part in it last night. And I know everybody wants to rain on Milwaukee's parade and saying, man, you just barely win game 3. What's going to happen when James Harden comes back? And what's going to happen when Kevin Durant and Joe Harris start knocking down some shots? And I'll just say, I don't know if that is all a given. I don't know if James Harden seamlessly moves back into the lineup. I don't know if Joe Harris continues to hit shots or not hit shots like he missed last night. I don't know if Kevin Durant's got another 11 of 28. I think he probably does. I think if PJ Tucker continues to do what he does, that's going to help Milwaukee along the way. And Milwaukee didn't help their cause either. I mean, they were carried by Giannis and Chris Middleton, yet all we're talking about today is Giannis missing free throws and Giannis taking threes, which, by the way, this was Giannis after last night's win.
Win is a win, and at the end of the day, as I said, last game, lose by 40, lose by 1, it's still the same thing. You know, it's still the last. And today we didn't score a lot. It didn't look as pretty, but at the end of the day, we got a win. And, you know, that's why we came and showed up tonight.
I mean, Bryn Forbes went 0 of 4. Like, there's enough for Milwaukee there to change as well that I think could do them well in Game 4. So I don't think it's the end-all, be-all that they only won by 3 in a hard-fought game that this season is over with. I think Milwaukee has a chance in Game 4, and you take this game, and I don't see any reason why something similar couldn't carry over into a Game 4 or a Game 5 as the series will now at
least go. When your star player is airballing free throws in the playoffs and getting 10-second counts, you're not winning this series, bud. They don't have a chance. I hate to say they don't. Like, low-key, like, Kyrie can go out, Harden can switch back in and, like, tag team in. Like, hey, Harden, it's your turn. And they don't have a chance. I'm sorry. It's just not going to work out because do you know how hard it is to score the basketball in the playoffs when you not only cannot shoot, but you're struggling from the free throw line? Because where do you want to put Giannis? On the free throw line. You know, last night, Milwaukee shot 19% from three and 63% from the free throw line. And one of those free throws didn't even count.
I know. I know. Like, I get all that. I actually thought that the 10-second thing last night may have been another blessing in disguise for him, because when it happened in the Miami series, he seemed to get in more of a rhythm. And, you know, even Charles Barkley and inside the NBA talked about this. It became more of an issue, and I wonder if it exited his mind because he thought the Miami series is over with. And Caron Butler wasn't on the bench doing the count, and the fans in Miami weren't doing the count. He thought, oh, hey, I'm at home, you know, go back to the normal way of things. I actually think it could be a blessing in disguise for him. And the crazy thing about it is,
explain this one.
He was great last night outside of launching threes. That's more of my issue with him is, and he was questioned a couple of times about that on if it's the best decision. I'm more worried about him shooting 1 of 8, and I think that changes than him going 4 of 9 from the free throw line. It's a wasted possession. You might as well cross home or half court and just throw the ball out of bounds if he's going to take a three, because it takes him so long to load up and shoot that there is no offense that ends up being started from it. It's him at the top of the key and getting 10 feet because Claxton is just standing in the middle of the lane, basically daring him to shoot the ball. Or Blake Griffin is doing the same thing, waiting for him to drive. That's where I think the Bucks have to change it up. And he can't take 8 threes anymore. But you know what? Go 4 of 9. If he gets to the line 15 times, I think in game 4 he ends up hitting 10 or 11, which helps them along the way. The Bucks were awful. You mentioned it. 6 of 31 from 3-point land last night. Giannis missed 7 of them. But there are guys that are going to be hitting them. I mean, Brook Lopez was 1 of 5. He's at some point got to start to hit shots. I think that's going to happen for Milwaukee. So I just don't think it's do or die. I know it's an air ball, but I think the 10-second thing, and we found out it was 13 seconds, I think it's a blessing in disguise for Giannis to get more of a rhythm at the free throw line.
No, you got to be kidding me. Listen, it's a culmination of everything. It all ties into one, air balling from the free throw line, 10-second counts. You know, he hasn't air balled from three yet, but he doesn't have the confidence. I like that he inched in a little bit and shot some mid-range jumpers over Blake Griffin. That was the right call. But, you know, when you're going against a team where you don't have the margin of error, when you're playing against Kyrie and Kevin Durant, arguably the greatest scorer that we have ever seen play a game of basketball, you don't have the margin of error to work out the kinks and say, hey, man, you know, shoot this three. We'll see where it – no, like, you've got to make every single point – count. You literally have to. And we talked about the whistle. The Nets only shot 8 free throws. That's not going to happen again, but I've just seen this dance before. I'm extremely concerned. I don't buy into a win is a win is a win, because Milwaukee is, they are struggling, man, and just to manufacture points, it is too hard. And you're not going to get, you know, we saw down the stretch of the game that Kevin Durant was heating up. I mean, P.J. Tucker played about as fine a defense as they could. And, you know, we got to question the mental toughness of the Nets in that scenario. And I believe they'll be better where they couldn't even get the ball to Kevin Durant. You know, hats off to P.J. Tucker. We know the fouling was there. It happens. It happens. It's part of playoff basketball. They couldn't even get him the ball. And nor to Kyrie Irving. And the question also was, I know Jrue Holiday is arguably, you know, the best or a top three defender at the point guard position, but he just eliminated Kyrie Irving. How much of an issue do you think that is? Let me look. What did Kyrie? Because he was
9 of 22. He was 9 of 22 last night from the floor and had 22 points.
Didn't even look like he wanted the ball at certain times. That's an issue for me.
Yeah, and this happened in one of their regular season meetings. They played at the end of the year. They played a back-to-back. They like played because of the crazy NBA schedule. But there was, in the first game of their back-to-back games, Kyrie was shut down by Jrue Holiday. And I'll say this. I think when you look at the Bucks box score and the two names that you mentioned, P.J. Tucker and Jrue Holiday, you're saying, where's the production? Jrue Holiday only had 9 points, but arguably had the biggest bucket because he had the go-ahead layup that put Milwaukee up by 84-83 with under 12 seconds to go. He only had 9 points last night. P.J. Tucker had a goose egg. But would you say P.J. Tucker played a bad game if Kevin Durant went 11 of 28 from the floor? Like, I don't think – like, I think that the Bucks would trade that. And P.J. Tucker is bound to hit a corner three at least some point in game 4. So I think you're going to get that. I think the Bucks are saying, listen, all right, we had our guys lock him up. Jrue Holiday and P.J. Tucker can keep Kevin Durant and can keep Kyrie Irving just, you know, on their heels and making them feel uncomfortable. You can let Giannis and Chris Middleton maybe carry that scoring load like they did last night, 68 of their 86, and then hope that Brook Lopez hits some shots. Maybe Bryn Forbes doesn't go 0 for 4. I think Milwaukee's fine with that, and I think that's how the series is going to play out. A series, by the way, Ryan, that I think is going to go at least 6 games.
Nah, I'm sorry. I just don't see. I know you're trying to keep the fans optimistic. You're trying to keep them in it. And you're right. You know, if you're holding the Brooklyn Nets to 83 points, that's an excellent job. But we spoke about this yesterday. I will give, if I'm going to give a letter grade, I'm going to give the Bucks a B. Not a B plus, a B. I thought Giannis tried to play at the rim, even though he took some threes that we all agree he shouldn't take. But the element missing for me, as we spoke yesterday, and shout out to the listeners who were hanging with us yesterday, Jrue Holiday, you got to put the basketball in his hands. And he's got to get attempts at the rim. He's got to be in pick and roll situations. I know Middleton's your guy, but let it be Middleton and Holiday and then feed Giannis in scenarios where he can be effective. You know, only getting 14 shots for Jrue Holiday is enough. 14 shots, 5 assists. He's too good not to have the ball in his hands. I remember playing against a young Jrue Holiday when he was in Philadelphia. I was in Boston. He dismantled us one game. I mean, he absolutely had a field day with us. And to me, he's a real X factor because, you know, where you're looking at P.J. Tucker, and I completely agree with you, go, P.J. had zero, but he just frustrated as best he could Kevin Durant, right? I'm looking at Jrue Holiday saying Jrue has the ability. He's going to have to be the guy to score 25-plus points and take Kyrie Irving out of the basketball as he did. Kyrie Irving didn't even look like he wanted the basketball in those closing scenarios, seconds.
It was a crazy, crazy game, one where the Bucks led by 20 in the first quarter and then have Brooklyn get within three at halftime. It was a great, great basketball game last night. Bucks survive and now make this a series. One thing to note that I think is important, at least when you look at what Milwaukee's done offensively, because they just don't seem like they have been the same team. You know, they had a game with 29 assists and against the Miami Heat. And obviously, when you score 86 points, you're not going to have tons of assists. But their ball movement was an issue last night. They just had 12 assists last night. They got to move the ball more. It can't just be so much ISO. That's something the Bucks are going to have to change around.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Joining us, friend of the program, senior writer for Sports Illustrated, Pat Forte, joins us on this Friday to talk about the new, likely expanded college football playoff. Happy Friday, Pat. How are you?
Hey, doing well, guys. How are y'all?
Doing good. When we've always had these conversations of college football expansion, it was expanding from four, and we're like, okay, 6 or 8 or 16. How did 12 end up falling into the equation, and how does it end up winning out over the other options that we've seemingly always been talking about?
You know, I think it's maybe the path of least resistance satisfies the most constituents, so to speak. The problem with 8 is that you would give, you know, 6 automatic bids, the 5 power conferences plus a group of 5 team, and that would only leave 2 at-large bids. And the power conferences, basically the SEC, said that's not enough. We want, you know, that limits our access. As it is now with 4 at-large bids, we could get 2 or 3 of those. If it's 8, I don't know. We take our chances. So they pushed for more. And I think that was well-received because it's just going to get more teams and more players involved. That you know, they trotted out statistics that football, FBS football, has the lowest postseason percentage participation rate of any sport. So how do they open it up? Well, play more games, have more teams. And I also think that the addition of campus sites is going to be a big selling point for this as well, for those first-round games.
Now, Pat, how does this affect the rest of college football? When I say the rest, there's certain big names. You know, me and Dan went back and forth yesterday, said, yeah, the Ohio States are going to be in it, Clemson's going to have a shot, the Alabamas. But, you know, us on the little old West Coast over here, we're struggling to have some representation in the national championship. Do you feel like this opens things up to kind of spread the wealth? We beg for parity in the NBA. Are we going to get this in college football?
Yeah, I think it does. You know, I mean, it may not spread the wealth as far as who wins the championship, but it spreads the wealth as far as who gets a shot at it. You know, the Pac-12, that was one of Larry Scott's failings, is he should have been for years banging on the table saying expand the playoff because the Pac-12 needed expansion. And now you expand this far, and they're almost assuredly going to get one, and they'll have a good chance of getting 2 bids in some seasons. So, you know, I think it helps for them. And it definitely helps that, you know, that second tier of teams in a lot of leagues, you know, in the Big Ten, you're probably looking at bids for sure most years, maybe 3, the SEC, 3, you know, the Big 12, et cetera. I just think there's more fan bases come November 1st that are going to be saying, hey, we've got a chance to go to the playoff, where, you know, in years past with the 4-team deal, by November 1st, there's about six teams that still have a shot at it.
Pat Forty joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. Find him on Twitter at @ByPatForty. Now, I probably came off yesterday like a negative Nelly. I've been a college football fan all my life. Change is difficult, and this is also difficult for me. But one of the things that I am concerned about is the and we've had a good turn towards scheduling tougher non-conference opponents. Now with the field bigger, do you think that will make schools shy away from having those marquee matchups that we have become more accustomed to in September?
Yeah, I hope not. I mean, I understand the concern is, you know, you're telling people conference championship matters most, and so why try to do anything outside of that? And especially if you're going to go, 8-1 in your conference, why not try to win those other three games and be 11-1? If you don't win your championship game, you're still going to have a chance to get in. But I also think that strength of schedule will continue to matter. You know, I think teams scheduled that way in recent years because they realized that was the way it was going, and I think that'll still be the case. Is if you want to get in, you're going to need some quality wins. So I'm hopeful that they're still going to schedule those games and play those games.
Hey, Pat, from a recruiting aspect, does this help or hurt the rest of the teams? You know, being able to say, hey, we had a shot to play in the college playoff, and how was it prior? How big or little of a difference this is? I'm among the belief that this is huge just to be represented. I know on the basketball side, I cover college basketball, just to say from a smaller school that you're a tournament team, you know, you change the entire environment and recruiting-wise. How big is this for college football or little?
No, it's big. I think it's absolutely big. Is yes, to be able to just to say that we are a playoff program. Yeah, that's a really big deal. Yes, from a basketball standpoint, if you are, I don't want to say Gonzaga because they're too big, but if you're St. Mary's College, you say, look, we've been to the tournament for the last 6 years or whatever the number may be. Well, same thing in football. You say, hey, we may have been the 12th seed, but we were there the last 2 years. Come play for a playoff team. So I think it's going to be a big selling point just for more schools to have that and to say that they were in the hunt. And, you know, to be sending out your blasts to the guys you're recruiting saying, hey, watch us play Sunday. We're number 10 in the rankings. We're in the playoff right now. Keep an eye on us. You know, that sort of thing. I think it really does give you a greater selling point with the recruits.
Pat Forty joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. It's the Doug Gottlieb Show. I'm Dan Beyer. He's Ryan Holland sitting in for Doug. Final one for you, Pat, and it involves Notre Dame, because they wouldn't be able to get one of those first-round buys because they aren't in a conference. Are they good with that? Do you think there could be more of a move towards the ACC? But how are the Fighting Irish now affected once this new model comes in?
That part really interests me. I don't know for sure. I mean, because they, for Notre Dame to just kind of basically willingly give up a top four spot and say, that's an acceptable thing for us. That makes me wonder if Jack Torbert, the athletic director, who was the head of the committee that came up with this thing, might just be wondering if he's sending a message to his school saying, yeah, maybe we should stay in the ACC full time. You know, that it was good for them last year for multiple reasons. He might be of a mind that ACC membership might not be that bad a thing, because the 1 year they go 12-0 and get a 5 seed and they don't get one of those buys, I think you might be hearing from Notre Dame about that.
Yeah, that was the first thing that popped up when we kind of heard all of the things playing out. And you're like, wait a sec, what about Notre Dame? And interesting to hear you say. So the ACC experiment last year, even in the COVID and everything, worked well for the Fighting Irish and everything that you understand?
Well, yeah. I mean, they would have had a horrible time putting together a schedule. It would have been like BYU's schedule as an independent with nobody to play. You're just trying to find games here and there. It gave them games. It gave them good games. It maintained their NBC deal. And it got them into what they won the league championship regular season, you know. And so then you've got that, and you're playing in an ACC championship game that about 9 million people watched. So I think it was a very good thing for Notre Dame. I know why they like their independence, and I'm sure there are people involved with the university that want to keep it. But being in that ACC for a year was not bad for them.
Yeah, got into a national semifinal as well. Pat, we appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Stay cool, and yeah, as this story develops, I'm sure we'll be knocking on your door. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Pat.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Double dose of NBA action on this Friday tonight. The scene switches from Philadelphia to Atlanta. Sixers and Hawks. Joel Embiid still could be a question mark for Philadelphia. Don't know of his status in advance of Game 3. While the Suns go to Denver tonight. Phoenix up 2-0 in the best of seven series. Nuggets trying to get a Game 3 win to stay alive in this series. The other doubleheader that we had last night, really, Ryan, we talked about it yesterday. I felt it was the marquee matchups that we have wanted in these NBA playoffs. It's not meant to slight the Suns or Nuggets or the Hawks or Sixers. There just seems to be more storylines, more, I don't know, star power on when you have the Bucks and Nets and you have Kevin Durant against Giannis and then you have Kawhi Leonard and Paul George trying to redeem themselves. Last night was some great hoops, and Bucks and Nets were something else. And then Clippers and Jazz, again, living up to the billing, but Utah gets a 2-0 series win, and now we're saying, uh-oh, here we go, same old Clippers. Do they have enough to get out of this 2-0 hole?
I think they do. We touched on it a little earlier. The Jazz hit 23s, but what is scary about this scenario, and I'm going to be upfront with you, this isn't, they aren't the Dallas Mavericks. The Dallas Mavericks had a lot of holes. They're a very Luka-centric team. Dallas was the team that they beat the last year. The Jazz play hard. They're not going to beat themselves. Ultimately, we spoke about this. The Clippers have a more talented roster. Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Morris Senior. The Clippers have a really, really good team that can switch pick and rolls. They can present problems for you on the offensive end of the floor once their one-on-one players can get going. But Utah is playing at a different gear right now. Now, are you among the many? And I looked at Utah, and I'm feeling a little better about them that, you know, would laugh and say it's a joke when you say they're contenders. There's a lot of people amongst the belief that the Utah Jazz are contenders and felt that way all year long.
Well, here's what I think happens. I think people don't watch the Jazz. Because I think that people only will watch, and I'm not saying you, I'm just saying when...
I don't watch them like that. It's yeah, true.
With we watch the Lakers, we watch the Clippers, we watch the Brooklyn Nets, and I would say that's probably... And the Warriors. And those are the four teams that people watch. I would even say that sometimes maybe the Clippers get into that, but I would even put them to that point. But then you go to the next tier, and maybe you're watching Luka, maybe you're watching the 76ers, maybe you're watching the Knicks, but I don't think that people are watching Utah. And I say this because this is the frustrating part about being a Bucks fan is the Bucks team that we've seen in the regular season the last 2 years, not this one, but the years before when they had the best record. They played really good basketball, and understanding that regular season and playoffs are different, but it's just so easy to say, they don't have it. They don't have it when it comes to the playoffs when you don't know what they have in the first place. And what I think was so intriguing about watching this Utah team in these first two games of this series is that it just isn't the Donovan Mitchell show. Even though he's been magnificent, like Jordan Clarkson, sixth man of the year in the NBA, comes in and does his thing. Joe Ingles ends up having to be in the starting lineup because Mike Conley's dinged up. He plays his role. And then you got, you know, Bojan Bogdanovic. He's a good player. It kind of goes back to the point of they have got really good players 1 through 8. And when we talked about big threes and do they work yesterday, Utah is a good example, and it's been working right now because their 1 through 8, I think, is maybe the best in the NBA. And they've got that one in Donovan Mitchell, but we don't pay attention to them. So we just say, Utah's number one. They're another team that does well in the regular season. But when it comes down to it, it's going to be the Lakers and Clippers. And that's what I think Utah falls victim to.
Well, here's the reality. Early in the year, Shaq went on and just told Donovan Mitchell straight to his face. I don't know if we respect that or not. I thought it was poor timing that he wasn't a superstar. Superstars close games. And Donovan has shown you sprinkles of it, but he's looking like the real deal right now. Now, I'm not all the way 100% sold, but I'm glad he continues to improve. And the biggest difference that I see that I like from the Jazz is they've got guys who can break you down individually and score. And they struggle to do that in the playoffs. When they can't run their system and they've got to go one-on-one, can they go one-on-one? They have vastly improved in that aspect and scenario. So when I say run their system, you go, oh, what the heck are you talking about, Ryan? When they run their system means I'm coming off a pick and roll. The weak side big or the strong side big has to guard the point guard and Rudy Gobert. And until the guard gets back in front, you know, you're going to have options of Rudy Gobert rolling, corner threes, or the guard taking a shot. Now, at some point in the playoffs, everything is switched, which means there is no roller. It's just one-on-one basketball. And you're looking at a Jazz team that has improved playing one-on-one basketball. And Donovan Mitchell, when needed, has been able to create his own shot. But most of us believe, like Shaq believed, and said, Donovan, are you a superstar yet? Are you a guy that's going to do this at the highest level? And he's looking good so far. I'm not sold completely, yeah, but he's looking good, right?
I actually, not looking back on it, for as awkward as it was, and for some of the flack, if you will, that Shaq got and how he asked the question, it actually may be the turning point. It may have been, maybe, and I don't think that Shaq was going for that to be how uncomfortable it was, but I do think what he was going for is what is happening. And so I would actually give Shaq a victory lap on this if it turns out, yeah, it was awkward TV and it just didn't feel right. I think Shaq just probably didn't go about it the most opportune way, but I think it actually is going to work out, and I actually think that it plays a role in it. And the most surprising thing about this is Utah's just playing the same sort of game that they played during the regular season. I mean, it helps when you have two guys hit six threes apiece like they did last night. But we're so on Milwaukee and the problems that they have in carrying over what they do in the regular season to the postseason. Utah just keeps playing and doing what they do. And if I'm the other teams, that's what scares me. Now, it's not as much about the Clippers and looking at them being down 2-0. If I think they win game three, do I think that they win game four? Probably, but I just don't know how you can fault Utah or just push them off and say, just wait till the Clippers end up winning two games, because they're doing what they did in the regular season, and that is proving to be the way that they're winning games in the playoffs. So I have to tip my cap to at least Utah for continuing to do that.
Well, the regular season is one monster, and Utah's always going to be good under Quinn Snyder as long as he's there. You got a roller in Rudy Gobert who's going to shore up the paint for you, and they hit threes. And they play hard. You know, they run their offense. There's no break in a Quinn Snyder's team as far as the execution is concerned. But the one-on-one play has much improved. Another guy who's Shaq put a battery in their back. You can probably thank this Utah run to Shaquille O'Neal's challenges. He told Rudy Gobert he wasn't worth the money. He told Rudy Gobert, three-time defensive player of the year, that he wasn't worth the money. Yesterday, tallies 20 rebounds, plus 14 on the night, 13 points. I don't know about you. That's worth the money. But Rudy Gobert goes on to be a three-time defensive player of the year. Are you kidding me? But when you hear a challenge like that, maybe it's what the Utah Jazz needed to hear, man.
I think it is. And I think now when you're looking at, nobody's going to question Donovan Mitchell being a star in the NBA, but he is their unquestioned number one. And the question is how long does it take for Donovan Mitchell to get to superstar status? And that's where also I think Shaq was coming from in all of this. I don't think that Utah needs to win an NBA title. I do think they need to get to the NBA Finals. I think that elevates you if you're Donovan Mitchell. And if you were to look at their road, getting the series win over the Clippers, if they end up doing so, would be a pretty good feather in his cap in being that guy. But for as great as Donovan Mitchell has been since he missed game one of the Memphis series, when you are on that verge of being star to superstar, you have to at least get to the NBA Finals. I mean, look at what it did for Jimmy Butler last season and where it's elevated him and just how we look at the stars of the NBA. And I don't even know if Jimmy Butler is a superstar, but he seems to be near that echelon of guys that we talk about a lot. If Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz get to an NBA Finals, I think that puts Donovan Mitchell in superstar status.
Well, if he gets to an NBA Finals, he'll flirt with it. Superstars, well, it also depends, Dan, how you define superstar. You know, superstars are the guys. Me and a lot of former players, we're very slim pickings on who we call super. It means you can get me a championship if you've got one. Damian Lillard, he hasn't gotten a championship, but we know with the right pieces around him, he'd get a championship. There's no doubt in anybody's mind at this point in his career that he is. Steph Curry's a superstar.
Yep.
Kevin Durant's a superstar. LeBron James, superstar. Kyrie Irving, part-time superstar. Jimmy Butler, part-time superstar.
Dame.
No disrespect to who those
Dame?
Guys are. Who?
What about Damian Lillard?
No, I said Lillard.
Oh, did you? Okay.
But the point with Lillard is we all have faith. Correct me if I'm wrong. Text me, tweet me, call in. If I'm wrong, that if the right pieces were on Damian Lillard, he'd bring you a championship. So we say superstar in that scenario. So ultimately, it's slim pickings who we call superstar. So Donovan Mitchell, if you're going to be superstar or part-time superstar, you know, part-time all-star, we got to see it in either an NBA championship, you know, a good run. You spoke about Jimmy Butler, who had a 30-point or what was a 40-point triple-double in the NBA Finals, even though, you know, they end up losing. But you got to see that type of performance. And he's had exciting performances, but he hasn't sealed the deal. Last year, losing, it was exciting, but losing and getting walked down by the Nuggets.
I think, like, when you see it, you know it.
Hmm.
And that's the toughest part about, like, we know that Durant is a superstar. We know Giannis is. We actually know Luka is.
Do we know Giannis is?
Oh, yeah. He's a two-time MVP. Yeah.
But, I mean, so you're a regular season superstar? Like, superstars aren't made in the regular season. I'm sorry. You have all the regular season accomplishments that you can, and you get to the playoffs and you're airballing free throws. I don't think you just throw that around lightly. I mean, I don't know. How do you define superstar? You know, I think we got a question, and everybody, oh, you're not calling him a superstar. No, we just have a tighter criteria for superstars as former players.
When you see it, I think that's what I think you know. And that's why I put Luka and Dame, like, I think that they are superstars without the credentials. And I think that Donovan Mitchell, if he could get to the NBA Finals and being the number one of that team and doing it in that atmosphere, that rises him to the level. He's not as the immediate as a Luka or a Dame has been and hasn't been doing it as long as Damian Lillard has. But I do think of getting that level of being the leader of that team and just getting to an NBA Finals, which has been dominated by the Curry, Durant, and LeBrons of the world, to get to that stage, I think would be enough where then we would consider Donovan Mitchell that player. That's how I think that would end up elevating him to that spot if he could get there.
I agree. When you have the team, you get out of the conference finals, you make it. You make it in, and if you're losing, it better be to a group of superstars. So if you're Donovan, you know, you could definitely make a huge push right here. You know, so you got no gripes from me, brother, with that one. But I'm not anointing him yet. And it's funny. It's not as a disrespect, and we both agree. It was horrible timing from Shaquille right after guy has an amazing game. Well, you're not a superstar. I mean, dang, thank you. Right?
Yeah, it was just awkward. But I think his message and what he wanted to do, you know, was there. I've got the perfect way. This is how it's going to wrap it up. I've only flown first class once or twice, just because of, like,
I don't know if I buy that
pure mix up, because it's like, oh, guess what? We have an open seat or an extra seat. You can fly. I would say that there would be there's about four rows, two on each side in first class. Is that about right? So you would have 16 seats. Like, that's how you determine superstars filling the first class cabin on an airplane. You take those 16 seats and you can put superstars, and once it's full, it's full. I think that's maybe how you determine it. Is that fair enough? Or is that too broad? Is 16 too big of a number when it comes to superstars?
Yeah, you're too broad. You're too broad when you say that. Either you are or you aren't, you know, but it's very slim pickings, because we're talking championships. We're not talking MVPs. We're talking finals MVPs. There's a difference, okay?
Yeah.
There's a difference.
We're short on time. Let me quick do it. LeBron, Curry, that's two, would be in there. Kawhi, you'd put superstar three. Durant, superstar four. Kyrie, superstar?
No, part-time.
No.
Part-time.
What about Harden?
Part-time.
Part-time. Jeez. Jeez. Your first class is like the two rows across. I had Giannis on there. I had Luka on there. Maybe I'm more lenient. Anthony Davis?
Yeah. You got to make it to a finals, dude. You got a friendly, but everyone defines it different. I have no problem at how you define it. You know, a special player for you is a superstar. Those guys are all special players that you named.
I think Donovan Mitchell's identity and brand and who he is would go up with a trip to the NBA.
See,
finals.
Now you're just saying Brandon because you like him. We all like Donovan. That's not a question. He's a great guy, man.
He is.
He's a great guy, okay?
He is. But, he 37 in last night's, 45 in the previous game, 30 to close out Memphis, 30 the game prior to that. Like, there's – you can't argue with those numbers. And that's this is maybe, the bubble, for as great as he and Jamal Murray were, unfortunately Jamal Murray not healthy, to see him continue this, I think tells us that Donovan Mitchell is on that track.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, a teammate of ours at Fox Sports Radio, you can hear him on the 3 and Out podcast, former NFL scout who joins us every week on the Doug Gottlieb Show, John Middlecoff, here to talk some football. You watching this tennis or golf? What's going on right now, Middlecoff?
I actually have golf on in the background. Have a little money spread out on the golf.
Sure. Fair enough. The warming up for Torrey Pines. I'm curious on your take on Russell Wilson yesterday. He says, I never demanded a trade, that some of this kind of got blown out of proportion, but he did show up for the voluntary workouts, and they have a mandatory mini camp next week. Is all good in Seattle now that Russell Wilson is there and this is behind him, or do you think there will be lingering effects?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, I wouldn't say a bold-faced lie, but he's fudging the truth. I mean, his agent went on record and listed teams. And I think we know Russell is very, very image conscious. I mean, I would say the number one guy in the NFL who is just obsessed with how he's viewed in the public. So I get where he's coming from, but his frustrations, and I thought they were first, kind of class problems. He's lived a charmed NFL life. I mean, he's been on by far probably a top two or three team in the league for a decade. When he got to the league, they were really equipped. And I get the last couple of years, they were flawed, but the front office had done everything humanly possible. Maybe he just realized, they're not going to trade me, and I have it pretty well, right? I mean, I got two stud receivers. They re-signed my running back. They made aggressive moves. They've always made aggressive moves for him. They just haven't always worked. But you get credit for attempting to, Percy Harvin, Jimmy Graham, look at Jamal Adams. That is trying to help the team. I mean, they've invested a lot of picks in making those trades. So, I expect him to, like he always is, just show up and play well and be one of the best players in the league.
Hey, John, one of the things I love about your work is you're not a tap dancer. You like to make statements. You put them out there. You're not soft shoeing anything. And I gotta throw one to your brother. Let me know right now: is Julio Jones still a 1,000-yard receiver next year?
Yeah, I mean, you saw the video that went kind of viral yesterday of him just doing the footwork. I mean, he's an all-time freak show. I mean, he's an all-time just great player. The only question, if he's on the field, I would say for 12 games, 100%. Just old guys in the NFL, it can be hit or miss at position, position players. Obviously, quarterbacks play longer, but, a hamstring. I remember Carson Palmer told me this a couple years ago. When you get injured in, like, your 20s, and you know this, Ryan, I mean, I just think you don't even need to be a pro athlete. When you're young, you just recover faster. Once, to me, you get over that 30-year mark, 31, 32, 33, you just don't recover fast, right? Whether it's from drinking, whether it's from walking around, whether it's you're a pro athlete and you're like Julio Jones getting tackled. Now, the one thing that he's got going for him with the Titans that he did not have with the Falcons is they are a balanced offense. I mean, their running back is their best player, right? I mean, I think he has like almost 4,000 yards the last 2 years. They're going to ride Derrick Henry, and A.J. Brown, you know, is also, like Julio, just a massive, big target. So I think that they can, in a weird way, ease Julio in. Like, they don't need Julio to be a 110-catch guy. If he can stay healthy, I think he could have, you know, 85 catches, 100, you know, 12, 1,300 yards, have a big season for sure.
He's John Middlecoff, former NFL scout, host of the 3-and-Out podcast. On the Herd Radio, on the Herd Podcast Network here on Fox Sports Radio. Get John on Twitter at John Middlecoff. I'm trying to figure out the best way to phrase this from a scout's point of view, but is there anything that Jordan Love would do or wouldn't be able to do if you were the Packers watching him that would make you maybe want to change your stance with Aaron Rodgers or trying to I don't know, warm up to Rodgers? Like, is there anything that Love can do in the mini camp that would maybe make Green Bay say, you know what, maybe we need Aaron here?
So you're saying, like, he not looking good makes you
kind of
double down?
Yeah, or is it just still not enough that we would get to really learn about Jordan Love in this scenario?
Yeah, I just think Rodgers is so good, and he is just such an unknown that your thinking wouldn't really change. I actually think it might go the other way.
Okay.
That if he was just so dynamic, because the one thing Jordan Love really hung his hat on was physically he was really gifted. He was big, he could run, and he had a big arm. A little bit like a poor man's version of what Josh Allen was coming out. So he was just this raw product that, you know, if you hit on him, he could become a really good player. So if you're watching him at practice and he's accurate, he knows the offense like the back of his hand now a year in, you know, the wide receivers finally showed up this week. If he has good rapport with that group, I guess Devontae was just hanging out on the sideline, but he was there, but the other guys were playing. Then maybe you go, well, you know, actually maybe we could compete with this player, right? And maybe you go, okay, Aaron, well, we will trade you for 4 first round picks and 2 second round picks, which to me is still very unlikely, but you know, reports were that he was good. Now, football is way different than the other sports because even when you practice in the off season, it's not even the actual sport, right? You're not wearing pads. Mm-hmm. The offensive and defensive line, especially now with the NFLPA really pushing back, and I've agreed with them on the physicality of the lines. It's just stupid. It's not fair to the defensive and offensive linemen to have to go full go without pads. Those guys are just too valuable to your team. So it's hard to get a beat on how he would be in pressure. You obviously can't tell when he gets sacked. There's just so much unknown, and Aaron's that great where it'd be hard to pivot because let's say you did capitulate. You're like, okay, Aaron, we'll trade you. We'll go with Jordan Love. If Jordan Love were to be not good, and let's face it, in like the history of quarterbacks, he more than likely wouldn't be he's more likely to be like average to below than really good. It would ruin their careers, you know, the GM and the head coach. So my take was this, you know, I'm a big mob movie guy, and they do sit downs. Now, obviously, in the mob, sit downs can get a little out of control, but I would have to get a sit down if I was Gutekunst and LaFleur this summer with Aaron. I'll do whatever it takes. I'll meet him in Malibu, meet him wherever he wants to meet, and even if he keeps saying no, I might just show up because we're all human beings, and you know, there's a lot of emotion on the line. You have to get a face-to-face in this situation and just try to talk through some of your differences, maybe see what you can do to help him out, to make him feel better, if that means guaranteeing more money, whatever it takes. But last season, I honestly thought that's the best season he's ever had. He was in full control. Now, you could argue, you know, no fans. It was easier for him than normal, right? On the road, he got the Saints to jump off sides in New Orleans, that would never happen in a normal game. But, like, Aaron was clearly focused, lasered in, embraced the offense, which is very quarterback-friendly, the Shanahan offense, and eviscerated the NFL. And this team, basically, they're rolling it back. I mean, they have a pretty good shot to win a Super Bowl. And Aaron's no dummy. He gets that. But, you know, I would have to sit down and try to talk out our differences.
John, excellent stuff there. We see you let us know how to move forward. But let's rewind a little bit. I really want to get inside the mind of an NFL GM and just tell me, how the heck do you think that it's a good idea to draft Jordan Love when you have Aaron Reich. What in the world did they think was going to happen? How does this even happen?
It was a calculated risk. In fairness to the GM, Rodgers has had a couple years. Now, I know they had made the NFC Championship that year, but he didn't look right. He looked like he was trending the wrong way. And in the history of the sport, you know, at his age, 35, 36, is kind of when they turn. Now we're in this age where you can play till you're 40, 45, who knows. And Tom Brady may never stop. They made a calculated risk, and it blew up in their face. Because, like I said, I think Rodgers, that was the best season he's ever had. I mean, he eviscerated everyone. So, you know, when you make – and the crappy part is, you know, in football – You could have the best defensive line in the league and draft the defensive lineman and no one cares, right? Or wide receiver. Mm-hmm. You have three sweet wide receivers, draft a wide receiver. Everyone's like, oh, this GM's great. But you do it at quarterback, it's very sensitive when the guy's good. And, it was a risky pick. And if Rodgers would have fallen off a cliff, he would have looked like a genius. But instead, he dominated, and then he's come out and says he hates everybody, and now they look like idiots. So, they rolled the dice on that one, and it did not come up in their favor.
He's a former NFL scout, now the host of the 3-and-Out podcast on the Herd Podcast Network, John Middlecoff. John, appreciate the time. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, fellas. See you later.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
It's put up or shut up time for one NFL quarterback. We dive into that here on Fox Sports Radio. Get Ryan on Twitter at the Ryan Hollins. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Craig Kishon. He covers the Milwaukee Bucks for Bally Sports and get a look at to what's ahead for Game 4 in a series that became a series last night with the Bucks' victory in Game 3. And, of course, two Game 3s tonight. First in Atlanta, Sixers and Hawks series tied up at one apiece. And then the nightcap in Denver where the Nuggets try to get back into their series down 2-0 to the Phoenix Suns. But we start with the National Football League here. And Russell Wilson, at the time we were doing the show and probably wrapping up our show yesterday, Russell Wilson spoke publicly with the media for the first time since his offseason of intrigue occurred right after Super Bowl 55 when he voiced his displeasure to Dan Patrick and also told reporters that maybe he was looking for more protection from his offensive line. Russell Wilson addressing the offseason comments publicly for the first time yesterday.
There was a lot of confusion because the reality is that I forget. I think I was in the Bahamas or somewhere and everybody was saying that I requested a trade. And that wasn't true, so we made it clear that I did not request a trade. And then there was teams being flown around that I was going to go to those teams, this and that. And so, you know, I think that, you know, when you look back at it, you know, it's part of, I don't know, it's part of it, unfortunately. You know, and I think that, you know, more than anything else, you know, that I got my wish, you know, in the sense that I've always wanted to play here. That's where I am. That's where I am right now. And, That's what I've always hoped for ever since 2012 when I put all the names in a hat and pulled out the Seahawks out of a hat, you know, and then sure enough, about, I don't know, 30 days later, the Seattle Seahawks picked me. So, you know, that's my mission. That's my goal. And that's why I'm here today and ready to roll.
Okay, I have no idea what the heck he was talking about at the end because he just tries to distract you from the main point. I get he wants to be in Seattle. I actually don't think that he requested a trade either. But when you start to put out these are the teams that are going to that I would be willing to go to, does make you think that maybe you thought about what life could be like outside of Seattle. And it's those comments, Ryan Hollins, that I think the quarterback that is the most pressure on him in the NFL this upcoming season is Baker Mayfield, just because I think of how close the Browns are and what that legacy in that franchise means and how important this season is. But I would put Russell Wilson in a close second in that one, and even more so than Aaron Rodgers, because to me it sounded like Russell Wilson just tried to get his way this offseason. Didn't want out like Aaron Rodgers did. He just wanted his way. And if you don't play well, and if you don't live up to your billing, then your demands of wanting to get your way are going to look foolish. Aaron Rodgers wants out of Green Bay. That's fine. He's towards the end of his career. But I think there's a lot now on the shoulders of Russell Wilson to carry, considering how much he was seemingly asking for this offseason, whether it be upgrades in the offensive line, input on the coordinator, which he did have. He asked a lot. Now it's kind of a case of put up or shut up in my mind.
I agree. I agree that he didn't want to leave Seattle. I think Aaron Rodgers has been done with the coaching situation. He's been done with the front office. And when they expressed to him that they didn't believe in him, Aaron Rodgers just, the common sense just said, get out of here, man. You know, put up a year in good faith. It's time to go. But Russell Wilson didn't want to go. The one thing I love about Russell Wilson, he's so likable that you got to credit, you know, within kind of the him wanting to get more and having to strike some fear into the front office, he just throws in so many positive comments in the between it. Hey, man, I'm ready to go. Let's get back out there. There's so much positivity. You can't be mad at Russell Wilson. But can you blame the guy? He's got to be the quarterback, the running back. When they don't want to invest into the offensive line, he just runs for his life. He just runs. The only other quarterback who I can think in mind and Dan pick me up, Gavin pick me up, is Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson, who just ran for his life. The ball got snapped and he's sprinting.
Yeah, Kyler Murray, I would say, would be the other one.
So, Dan, I'm not mad at either of these quarterbacks for feeling the way they felt, but Russell Wilson's smart enough to get ahead of it and say, before you guys boo me, before you get mad, before the Seattle faithful want to not like the last member, I was going to say living member, that'd be completely wrong, the last member of the Legion of Boom, he has to do some damage control now because he's going to show back up.
Thank goodness he didn't, first of all, say that. I think, though, that like Russell Wilson's comments are like looking for dinosaur fossils. Like like everything looks great. You don't really see anything there, but you got to dig and you got to dust off. And then you kind of find out really where he's coming from. Like, you're right. Like we're talking about him putting out teams and saying that this is where he would go if the Seahawks were trading him. And by the way, he's right. That's not him asking for a trade, but that is saying if you guys are looking for a trade, these are the only places that I would be willing to go. Now, you could also say, well, if you put out four teams, so the Seahawks are one, so that's five, that would mean there are 27 teams that I don't want to go to or that I wouldn't be willing to go to and I'd rather be in Seattle. You can spin it like that. The point that I want to make, though, is the whole thing of, remember when I was drafted and I drew out of a hat and it was the Seahawks and it was great. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, I'm a Seahawk and I've always wanted to. That's all mumble jumble, you know, happy, you know, things are great. And John Middlecoff hit it on the head. There isn't a quarterback that cares more about his image than Russell Wilson does in the NFL. And that's all this is. But the fact of the matter is this: everybody wants what Tom Brady wants. Everybody wants the power. They want the say when they're a quarterback. They want to have control of their organization. But first of all, nobody has the accomplishments that Tom Brady has. And second of all, it wasn't like Tom Brady got everything that he wanted in Tampa Bay. He wanted him to sign Antonio Brown right away. Buccaneers are like, it's not going to happen. In the end, yeah, they bring him in. Tom ends up being happy. Buccaneers have a great defense. He helps them lead to a Super Bowl, and they win, and everything's great. Hey, but that's his seventh Super Bowl. Dan, Russell Wilson's only won one, and he wasn't even really a part of winning that Super Bowl.
But Dan, the fact that he signed Antonio Brown at all was like, that was a thing. Like, that was a statement. Because his head coach came out and said, we are not interested in Antonio Brown. Hey, Antonio, welcome. We're running 46 zipper fly for you.
Hey, at least they showed restraint at least early. They didn't cave into everything. I mean, at least they said, we aren't going to do that at first. And then maybe they acquiesced and said, all right, let's do this. But even if they did give in right away, or maybe they didn't wait enough time, it's Tom Brady and everything that he has accomplished. Dude. And it's not to diminish what Russell Wilson has done in Seattle. It's just there comes a point where you have to realize that you're not Tom Brady and you can't get everything that you want. And so to make it all about him and his success, and that's the
you know, that's the tough part. They didn't. It doesn't seem like there's going to be an issue between he and his offensive line when it sounded when he seemingly threw them under the bus by saying, "I'm tired of getting hit." That's an indictment on your offensive line. It doesn't seem to be an issue. Didn't seem to be an issue in minicamp this week, and when they have their mandatory minicamp next week, I don't think it'll be an issue. But he did go there, and he went there in a season where he wasn't great in the second half of the year, and it was the second straight season that he did so. So now he's complained about all this stuff. He had a say in the offensive coordinator. They were in on Julio Jones. They didn't get Julio Jones, but they did have conversations. They've upgraded their offensive line, or at least added a piece with Gabe Jackson. They've done a lot for Russell Wilson. So now it's up to him to put up or shut up. Like, if Aaron Rodgers goes to Green Bay and has a bad season, I think we'll be like, well, maybe the MVP season was a flash in the pan. Too bad, Green Bay. You should have traded him earlier. But if Russell Wilson doesn't have a good season with the Seahawks,
hey Danny,
you're sitting there saying, why did you ask for all of this stuff when you can't have that MVP caliber season the entire now 17 games?
Hey Danny.
Yeah.
How many Super Bowls does Russell Wilson have?
One.
How many Super Bowls does Aaron Rodgers have?
One.
So why? I know you're saying Aaron Rodgers was kind of forced to. He played good last year. Russell Wilson was up in the air. Why?
Yeah.
You're very strong in saying that Russell Wilson, I feel like, are you saying career-wise, he's not the player that Rodgers is, that he's got to put up more? Why? You're very strong in saying this.
Well, Russell Wilson doesn't have the career that Aaron Rodgers has. They have the Super Bowl titles, but Aaron Rodgers played more of a role in Seattle in Green Bay's Super Bowl win than Russell did in Seattle's Super Bowl win. He did. Russ didn't throw a touchdown pass until the fourth quarter in that blowout of the Broncos.
Well,
the game was already over.
Hold on. If Pete Carroll didn't listen, we got to talk about it. If Pete Carroll didn't take the ball out of arguably the most physical running back that the NFL has ever seen on the gosh darn 1 yard line, there would be two rings.
Sure. Who threw the interception?
Yeah, I mean, anyone could have thrown that interception.
Listen, it wasn't complete. Russ threw the ball high on the pass. We could break down that pass and talk all about it. The point being, though, is as you look at it as a whole of what Russell Wilson's accomplished, statistically, you know, he's had some good seasons, but Aaron Rodgers' career outdistances him. But also, you have to realize that Aaron Rodgers is going to be 38 in December. Like, it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility if Aaron Rodgers does play for the Packers and doesn't have a great year that, you know, the sunset of his career is coming up in the next 2 or 3 years. And that's not the case for Russell Wilson, who's power playing in the prime of his career.
Yeah, well, wait.
That's all that I'm saying is, like, you need this. There are no excuses for Russ this year to not perform at his level. And if he wants to blame it on the team and say that he didn't get the offense that he wanted, really had a, you know, he had a say in the offensive coordinator. There's a lot of pressure on Russell Wilson this season.
Hold on. Dan Beyer with an E. Who had the better team? Last year, was it Aaron Rodgers? Or was it Russell Wilson? Who had the better team?
Aaron Rodgers.
By how much would you say? By how much?
They had a better left tackle when he was healthy. And a better running game. But, you know, it's not as far off as you would think. Seattle was 12-4 last year. They won the division. They were competing with Green Bay for that home field advantage.
See, okay. Hold on. See, here's what stinks. And here's the message. And correct me anytime you want to jump in. Anytime. Because Russell Wilson is extremely athletic, he can run, he makes something out of nothing. That's kind of his deal, right? They felt like they didn't need to give him an offensive line, a proper run game, just kind of go make it happen with DK. At least they drafted a wide receiver. Let's give kudos to Seattle. They gave him a wide receiver. They don't know O-line, but he got a wide receiver. Aaron Rodgers, there's an understanding. He was very well protected. Am I wrong?
Aaron Rodgers had a very good offensive line in front of him. Seattle's used to be the worst in the league. It would now be average, maybe slightly below average. But Green Bay, when they had Corey Lindsey and you had David Bakhtiari, those are two all-pro,
yes!
Not Pro Bowl, all-pro caliber,
yes!
Linemen. So, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, Russ is expected to do more with his legs. There was a time where they just said, run for your life. Like we're not investing. We feel that you're mobile enough. We're not going to invest as much. But those are also days in the past. There's just a lot of, when you ask what you asked for, if you're Russell Wilson, there is going to be an expectation then for you to perform, because he did receive some of those things. As you mentioned, they needed a wide receiver. They lost David Moore to free agency, so he's no longer. They needed a third wide receiver next to DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, and they ended up drafting Dwayne Eskridge from Western Michigan. So they've got a guy. They've added another guy there, but you've also added Gabe Jackson when you wanted offensive line help. They re-signed Chris Carson. They've made a lot of moves to appease Russell Wilson, and now it's time for Russell Wilson to put up. Or, you know it, he may need to shut up when it comes to wanting things in Seattle. How about that? That was big. I didn't want to tell Russell Wilson to shut up. I didn't want to say it, but it just worked too well in that sort of put up or shut up scenario.
You are attacking arguably one of the nicest guys in the entire National Football League.
I'm putting the spotlight on him. He wants the spotlight. He loves the spotlight. Now is the time to produce.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.